All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report, and we are going to continue to discuss more of the commodities markets, more of a focus on precious metals as well as a mix of maybe some base metals, energy in that whole narrative. We are now chatting with Jeff Christian, managing partner at the CPM Group. Now, Jeff, earlier this week, you held a webinar, more of a Q&A with your clients, with people that wanted to tune in, where you were simply answering the questions that they have sent in. We're going to use one question that I know is on a lot of precious metals bugs' mind to start off here, and that is the relationship between a potential recession, especially in the U.S., and gold and silver prices. Jeff, take us through your thought process here of how gold and silver prices react to a potential recession, whenever that might be.
It's interesting because I think the one that the historical precedent to pay attention to is the recession, double dip recession from 1980 to 1982. And that was a recession in which you saw the gold and silver prices, along with copper and oil and a variety of other commodities, the gold and silver prices rose very sharply in the year prior to the recession. And if you look at where we are right now, economic data is suggesting that the economic growth that we've seen 2021, 2023 is slowing down. There are signs that we could be slouching toward a recession, and you're seeing increased signs that that could happen. And the gold and silver prices and copper prices have risen very sharply over the last couple of years. So that's one of the things. One, you do have times when you see a recession and the gold and silver prices rise during the recession. And you also see times, for example, in the Great Recession, where gold and silver prices, gold started rising in 2002, silver started rising in 2005. We didn't get into a recession until the fourth quarter of 2007. The recession was over by 2009, but gold prices and silver prices continued to rise in before the recession, through the recession, and then in the 2 years after the recession. And they both peaked in 2011. And that reflected the fact that not only did you have a recession, you had the global financial crisis going on. You had the sovereign debt crisis in Europe, focused on Greece, but really throughout the southern tier of the EU zone, the Eurozone. And you had the downgrading of the U.S. Treasury equity debt in August of 2011. So the conclusion you need to draw is that we always say, people say, what's going to cause the next recession? And the answer is a variety of things coming together at the same time. There's usually not one thing that causes a recession. And in order to understand what the recession is going to look like and what it's going to mean for gold and silver, you have to look at the myriad of causes for that recession. And similar to where we were in the period 2005 to 2011, you have a lot of other factors that could contribute to a recession late 2024, 2025, that could continue beyond the recovery from that recession. And throughout that period of time, you could see investors continuing to buy outsized amounts of gold and silver, driving the prices further higher. So our expectation is that slouching toward a recession now, that's positive for gold and silver. Getting into the recession probably will be continuing to see investment demand and prices rise, and even coming out of the recession, because some of the political and economic and financial market problems that will contribute to the onset of the next recession will survive the recovery from the recession and continue to plague the world in a way that drives investors to buy more gold and silver, keeping the prices high and rising.
Well, Jeff, I'd like to tie in copper into the discussion here and really dial into both silver and copper, because they both had breakout moves in May where silver finally broke above 30, where copper broke to new all-time highs. And some of that was based around the energy transition narrative and that there's going to be a lot more energy capacity needed, so more copper to transmit it, more silver for solar panels. But then they both rolled over very hard over the last month. Is that in relation to the concerns about slowing of the economy, or how do you square those two narratives, the energy transition narrative and the economic contraction narrative, with silver and copper?
I think that what you're seeing in both copper and silver have done very well up until late May. And they were, as you said, there were two sets of factors that were driving investors to buy these two metals. One was the idea that we needed more copper and silver, that the world was short of this stuff, and we had a stronger economy than people had thought. We had certain supply disruptions in the copper mining industry on a global basis. So there was this shorter-term economic fundamental tightness that was driving investors to buy copper and silver. But there was also the energy transition. And I think what one of the things that you've seen over the last 6 weeks or 8 weeks is that, A, people have started to pivot their concerns away from, oh, we're having a soft landing, we won't have a recession, to, oh, we could get into a recession, and that could really reduce fabrication demand for copper and to a lesser extent for silver. And there's also been growing skepticism about the pace of the energy transition going forward. And there's concern that a Trump victory, if the Senate flips to the Republicans, that you could see some of the energy transition legislation revoked or negated, and you could see a lot of money being pulled out of some of these programs, federal money, which then would cause losses for the private money that's gone into investing in energy transition technologies. We saw a poll recently, actually we saw the results today, that said that half of the Americans who have bought electric vehicles say the next vehicle they buy will be a gas-powered vehicle. So there's some growing realization that the energy transition to electric vehicles will not be as fast or as large as had been anticipated by copper investors. And that there's also some headwinds in the solar power industry. Not so much that the technology doesn't work, but that there are constraints for componentry and there are some capital constraints. Solar power is still growing and it's growing rapidly, but it can't grow as fast as the world would like to see it grow because of a variety of these constraints. And so I think that you're seeing some investors sort of get, okay, maybe we were overly enthusiastic about copper and silver prior to May, and maybe we need to take a more sober reexamination of how much copper and silver the world really will be needing over the next 1 year, 3 years, and 25 years.
So the fact of the matter, Jeff, on the more demand side, is that energy needs do continue to grow, whether we satisfy that with green energy solutions or old school energy. It's going to be a mix. I think everyone agrees with that. However, some of these cleaner energies have been on upward growth trends. How do you see this mix playing out if certain things like solar can't keep up to the sky-high projections that some people have? What's the mix that you see in terms of metals and other energy sources that will be used?
We key our energy mix projections. We take them out to 2050. So we're going out 27 years, 26 years right now. And we key off of the International Energy Agency, their long-term projections. Our expectation is that by the year 2050, the major source of energy for humankind will still be oil. Now, oil demand may have plateaued for a couple decades by then, but it will still be the major place where we get energy. Natural gas will be the big winner. It has been over the last decade, and that will probably continue. And by 2050, we think that natural gas will be close to petroleum in terms of its contribution to the global energy supply. Solar will continue to grow, but it will remain a relatively smaller source of energy. The IEA and CPM group expect that by 2050, all renewable energy will be the third largest source of power, and that of that, hydropower and solar will be the two biggest winners. Wind power has more headwinds than solar power and hydropower. And then nuclear, which is very interesting, is going to grow very little over the next 25 years. There's some great new nuclear technologies. There's renewed interest in understanding it as a clean energy source or a relatively clean energy source. But there are massive social and political headwinds and opposition to building new nuclear power plants. And that's going to take some time to overcome.
Well, Jeff, when we get just back into looking at all of these different metals type, another thing that comes into the discussion is how much can be recycled of each one. And so looking at scrap supplies of silver and gold, looking at how much copper could come to the market, what's your impression on how recycling or people trading in metals at different prices are going to affect the markets in the year to come?
Yeah, you know, copper and silver recycling, which has been primarily jewelry and silverware and silver, but increasingly electronics because of increased electronic demand and also regulations that require end-of-life electronic goods to be turned in for recycling. Recycling of end-of-life materials has represented 15 to 20% of copper supply for decades, and it's growing. And it also has represented about 20% of silver supply, maybe a little bit more than that, maybe closer to 25% or 30% of silver supplies. And it's probably going to continue to grow. You're already seeing recyclers reprocessing and recovering silver from end-of-life solar panels and from mismanufactured solar panels. So that's already coming along. So in terms of those two metals, we expect recycling to continue to grow, partly because the world is becoming more oriented and recycling positive than it used to be, and partly because there is this growing body of recyclable copper and recyclable silver that's out there. As I said, traditionally, most of the recycled silver comes from jewelry and silverware. That's a price-sensitive consumer decision. People who own silver or silverware or silver jewelry, and say you get into a recession and financial constraints are there and the price of silver has shot up, you sell some of your old silver jewelry or silverware and to raise cash. That's changed somewhat, and the mix of silver scrap has changed, as I said earlier, to more electronics and industrial material. Electronics and industrial materials for copper and for silver are not so much cyclical or price sensitive. The industries that use this stuff and recycle it invest in a recycling equipment and system. They develop the ability to gather this material and recover the reusable metals. And having made that investment, they'll continue to do that even if the copper price falls and even if it's not as attractive as it would be for silver, for consumers to sell their silver jewelry. So we think that you'll see a more sustainable, you already are over the last 5 years, seeing a more sustainable flow of copper and silver from secondary materials. And that's going to continue.
What about looking internationally too, Jeff? How much weight do we need to put on what China's doing? What metals even China controls in terms of an energy transition or general energy needs, and other up-and-coming countries that will also need a mix of energy to supply what their growth plans are?
Yeah, that's a real issue, and it's an issue that it's a political solution, and the United States government has, over the last four administrations, taken a more hostile approach toward China. So too has Europe. So too have Eastern and Southeast Asian nations that are close to China and Australia. So you've got a breakdown of international cooperation with China, and that is bifurcating the economy, and it's also bifurcating the markets for these metals. And that's a real problem. And the solution needs to be political. And right now, what a lot of countries are doing is saying, rather than learn to live with a communist Chinese government in a cooperative fashion, the way we tried in the period from, say, the 1970s until 2006, rather than do that, we're going to try to build our own specialty metals industries and processing industries. And there are severe limitations to what you can do and what you can accomplish, and it'll be very costly. It'd be much less costly and more economically efficient to learn to live with other countries, but that doesn't seem to be on the cards right now.
Well, Jeff, I appreciate you breaking down the global look, and yeah, it is a complicated web, but we definitely need to get your thoughts on where you think the pricing is going in gold, silver, and copper. You know how it is, Jeff. People want to know where are the metals prices going, and you've got a pretty good handle on not just the supply-demand fundamentals, but also investment demand and how that factors in. So I'd love to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah. Our view on gold is that prices traded mostly between 2,300 and 2,400 since really the beginning of April, the first half of April. Couple spikes over 2,400. Our expectation is the price basically trades between 2,300 and 2,400 for the next 2 months, July and August. Once we get into September, October, we think that political and economic factors could take the price over 2,400 and possibly over 2,450. So we're looking for higher gold prices beyond August. Silver, we've got a similar but slightly more pessimistic view. You know, silver was trading in this range of, say, 30 to 32 in the second half of May. It's come down, and it's really been trading between, say, 28 and 31 since that time over the course of June. Our expectation is that there is some vulnerability that the silver price could come down to $28 or maybe even go below $28 over the next couple months. But then we expect it to recover in the final 4 months of this year and probably move back over $30 and possibly even over $32 over the course of the last 4 months of this year into 2025. Copper, right now we're expecting it to sort of move sideways next year at, you know, relatively high prices and possibly move higher in 2025. If we do see a recession in late 24, early 25, during the recovery phase, we think that copper will be in a tighter market balance and you will see higher prices, but probably not until really, you know, 2025.
Jeff, one other aspect of the investment demand that I want to get your thoughts on, our deal with fund and ETF flows. Clearly on the fund side of things, we're not seeing really any inflows into current metals funds or even new metals funds entering the sector. That impacts the underlying equities. But even in terms of ETFs, we're just not seeing those sort of flows. What's some of your data showing you in terms of the bigger money, whether it be specific funds focused on these metal sectors or just even the ETFs fund flow wise?
I think it's two distinct things. I think with the funds, what you're seeing, these are equity funds that you're talking about, right? And I think with that, you continue to see investor disenchantment with mining. And that's being reflected in a lack of investment in equity funds, you know, mining equity funds. With the ETFs, the physical metal ETFs, you've seen net sales of gold ETFs for 3.5 years now. And our take is that is a counterparty risk move because you've seen strong demand for physical gold on the part of investors worldwide. But as they're buying more higher volumes of gold bullion and coins, they're also selling off their gold ETFs. So I think what you're seeing is both institutional investors, high net worth individuals, and retail investors saying, I want to own gold directly. I don't want to own it through an ETF, partly because I want to have access to physical gold should I want that. But more importantly, I don't want the counterparty risks with the various financial institutions that operate and manage those metal ETFs.
Jeff, what about some of these new ETFs that especially Sprott has come out with, focused in copper, uranium funds? They've come out with a couple of those as well. We're seeing some new ETFs, again, in these sectors, focused a little bit more on the equities. They're generally small right now, but is this a good trend for the sector?
I think it's a bad trend, ultimately. Back when molybdenum prices rose very sharply in the mid-'80s, you saw a molybdenum fund created, and the investors ultimately lost $300 million in it. And you've seen cobalt funds, funds that focus on relatively small, illiquid, single metal markets. They're like traps, because when the price is rising, investors pour in, and a lot of these funds, and some of them are closed-end funds, which have additional problems, but a lot of these funds, most of these funds, the managers have no discretion on timing. Money's coming in, they have to buy assets. Money's coming out, they have to sell assets. And everyone knows that, so that while the price is rising, there's not enough moly, there's not enough copper, there's not enough cobalt, there's no direct ownership of uranium, or there is direct ownership, but you can't hold it because of its uranium. So you run out of physical metal and you start buying stocks. And all of a sudden, you have your maximum amount of most of the companies that are exploring for these metals. Copper is a little bit different because it is a very large metal market. But these smaller markets are really problematic. Then when the price of the metal peaks and starts coming down, the fund manager has to sell. And every day his decision is, what do I sell now? And everybody else in the market says, ah, that fund, which reports daily its assets under management, is a seller. We know that the asset value of all of these things that it owns will come down. And so what I think that these single metal funds do is they exacerbate the upward move during the bull market and they exacerbate the downward move. So from a market perspective, they're not good. And from an individual investor who's investing in them, they're not good. So we're not big fans of those funds. I mean, gold and silver are unique. When the gold ETFs were created in the early 80s, the SEC said, okay, this is gold. The real test for commodity ETFs will be silver, because silver is much more of a commodity, gold's more of a financial asset. And so when the silver ETFs came out 2006, 2007, that was the big test. But then again, silver is a quasi-financial asset. You have billions of ounces of silver in above ground refined inventories to meet that supply and demand for the ETFs. You don't have that in copper or lead or zinc or aluminum or manganese, other things. These industrial metals measure their inventories in weeks of supply, whereas gold and silver measure their above ground inventories in years of supply. So it's a radically different market balance that is skewed against not even single fund ETFs. You can have an LME ETF, but the availability of inventories to cover that and to provide the necessary liquidity, simply not there.
All right, Jeff, thank you as always for your time. I always find it interesting to hear the questions you're getting from some of your clients and the companies you work with, as well as what you're seeing on the investment front for a lot of these commodities. I know a lot of our listeners still wondering just how much longer this correction is going to go on for and when that next leg up will be, not just for the commodities, but when money will truly filter into some of these stocks, and we'll see a broad outperformance of the stocks over these metals prices. Everyone, thanks for keeping in touch with us throughout the week and on the weekend. Please keep emailing us, and please keep tuning in to our website, podcast, and YouTube channel for all the daily editorials and company updates. Jeff, again, thank you for your time. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend. And everybody, I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend. Everyone in Canada, I hope you have a great Canada Day long weekend. Thanks for tuning in this weekend, everyone.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Cortland Economics Report will be back in just a moment.